Welcome to Outspoken Voices, a podcast by and for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer parents, people with LGBTQ parents, and everyone else who is part of our family journeys. I'm your host, Emily McGranahan, and I am the East Coast Regional Manager for Family Equality Council. So today we're talking about New Year's resolutions, healthy families, and caring for yourself. Taking the time and making the commitment to care for yourself, whether that's through nutrition, exercise, meditation, activities you enjoy, finally getting that checkup, or just quiet time to read, all are important for everyone and really impacts parenting. All of this is valuable for families and at the same time can be complicated by the fact that we are part of LGBTQ families with license to discriminate laws around the country that, among other things, seek to deny people the right to use restrooms and locker rooms that align with their gender identity, backtracking on protections for transgender students in school, access to healthcare, and our ability to comfortably and safely access healthy spaces and a sense of well-being. All of this is really increasingly impacting our families and creating additional challenges as we are trying to keep ourselves healthy and safe and in really welcoming environments. So in this episode, we have a guest with us who is going to talk with me more about setting personal and family goals, caring for ourselves, and then really why it all matters. So our guest today is Jane Barber, and I'm really excited to have you with me today. So as we get started, can you tell us all a little bit more about yourself and your own experience with health and mindfulness and how you came to do this work?
Well, thank you, Emily. I'm really honored and excited to be part of this podcast. Wife Linda and I live in Provincetown in the summer. We are gay women. However, our journey started out a little differently. We were married to men, both of us, for quite a long time, and discovered our sexuality later in life and are very happily married. And between the two of us, we share 5 grown children, and she is lucky enough to have 5 grandchildren, which I enjoy vicariously. That's kind of my personal gay story. On other notes of who I am, I'm a deeply kind of sensitive and spiritual person. I'm also athletic, and professionally, I am a nurse, certified nurse practitioner with a specialty in pediatrics. I never really practiced that much clinically. My specialty has always been in the realm of education. I personally came to yoga about 20 years ago. As you can all imagine, a coming out story for anyone can prove to be difficult. When I realized my sexuality, I was deeply entrenched in a marriage to a man, raising 3 sons, and my world was turned on end, and I needed to find ways to support that journey that gave me strength. And that's what brought me to yoga initially about 20 years ago. But I didn't really get into yoga seriously until my health demanded it. So I guess yoga called to me 20 years ago for emotional support, but yoga became an everyday part of my life when physically I had some injuries as a result of teaching skiing. And that was about 3 or 4 years ago. So that's the yoga piece. In terms of the mindfulness piece, well, another thing I have no problem being transparent about. I suffer from depression and have come to the peaceful acceptance that using medication and other forms of support is something that I must stay committed to for all my days. So meditation, I got trained in transcendental meditation, which sounds super fancy, but it really is just a very scientific process where you use your own mantra and you commit 20 minutes a day to just sitting in quiet, quiet meditation. And again, why did I feel a need to finally commit to that? Because of a bout of depression where I really wanted to use something that would quiet my mind. So that kind of gives you a little background of what brought me to yoga and mindfulness from a personal perspective. And then professionally, because I am a teacher, because I am a nurse, because I love teaching, as we all know, you practice something and you don't really understand it until you start teaching it. And I just get such joy teaching yoga and meditation to special populations, meaning people with injury or having sustained trauma. And again, it's been a joy to bring yoga and mindfulness to the Family Equality Council during Family Week in Provincetown. So in terms of how do we prioritize or find time to do this kind of thing, especially with listeners in the throes of raising family, of having full-time jobs, I think the easiest way to start is just try and do something at home. There is so much available to all of us through the internet. There are free yoga programs. One is called Do Yoga With Me. Just try and start out. Even if you do 5 to 10 minutes a day, that is something. As we say, if you show up on your mat, your yoga mat, and you just sit there, you're doing yoga because you've made the commitment to take a little bit of quiet time out for yourself. I personally find that yoga studios are like anything. It's like finding your hairdresser or finding your doctor. It's hit and miss. You're going to need to find a community that you really relate to. But again, there are some barriers. One is time, finding babysitters, getting to the studio. Another is the cost of the class. So my recommendation is try and do things that are for free. For example, I teach yoga for free. I just came back from teaching a yoga class to some of my colleagues. Look for those type of opportunities. Maybe your workspace offers some free opportunities. Start small, start inexpensive, and try and get some traction. Again, healthy parenting. Maybe even try and involve your children. There are great books out there bringing yoga to children. Make it fun. Again, that's what I would recommend to anyone considering starting their own yoga mindfulness journey. Start at home, start small, start inexpensive, and let the process unfold.
Right. Yeah, thank you. That was really, really interesting to hear more about your own journey. And I love that you're sharing that. What has been sort of those like big moments, or not necessarily turning points, but moments where different healthy practices were so important to you, were related to, you know, changes in your family and emotional needs, health needs, you know, health needs in a variety of ways. I think that's so true for so many different people, that seeking out those moments of change or recommitting yourself to a particular practice that makes you feel healthier in whatever that means to you can be brought on by many different things. Often you hear people fear that you know, you kind of fear judgment when it comes to your health. You know, we see advertisements for boutique, fancy, you know, spin classes that just, you know, and you look and you see a lot of these advertisements, and like the folks in these commercials or in these ads, like, don't look like me. So it's harder to feel like, okay, I don't know that this is really the space for me. So what would you say to someone for whom that concern about being accepted or feeling like they won't be judged in a particular space. Like, what would you say to someone who sees that as a barrier?
Right. Now, let me ask you a question for this. Is this setting the cost of a class aside? So we're just looking for a community where they're feeling accepted for where they are at this point in time, going into a yoga studio. Okay.
Exactly. Or, you know, also thinking about being, you know, or a healthcare professional, or, you know, or going to the library for a community Zumba class. You know, like, there's so many different things.
Yes.
Exactly that. Aside from that very real cost for so many of these different spaces, you had mentioned a few more group spaces that can be low or no cost as well.
Right. Yeah, there are so many places that offer yoga because yoga is part of yoga's philosophy is we call it karma yoga, where it is part of our mission as yoga teachers to offer yoga at free or discounted prices. Again, I would suggest that anyone wanting to start a yoga practice within a community where they're going outside into a space where a yoga teacher is offering a program, you're going to want to look for one that offers classes that are geared towards beginners or offer classes that are geared towards what we call more restorative practices. This is an area in yoga that is really taking hold. People are needing to restore. So these are much gentler practices. So look at class listings, maybe talk to the yoga studio owner, and just interview them. And say, you know, I'm new to yoga, or I feel shy about what I view to be my inability to do yoga, and just kind of feel their vibe. So many different studios have different vibes. And again, you mentioned libraries. I would go to churches. I would go to libraries, synagogues, and see what they have to offer. Universities, they offer yoga classes. So again, interview for what you're looking for in terms of what I would call the social or the psychological approach of the studio. In my own practice, I've been involved in many different studios, and I am drawn to the ones that tend to be warmer, more accepting, more spiritual, less kind of that classic, you know, what you mentioned in the beautiful prana outfit on their hands, doing headstands. You know, it's like, you know, that's not for me. So be kind to yourself. And just know that the fact that you're even looking to get involved in yoga or meditation, if you're going to find a great studio, they're going to accept you where you are. And
I love that.
Lead their classes in a way that honors that.
Yeah, I love that. Being able to find a space where I don't want to say, you know, it's not necessarily baby steps, but it's being in a space that doesn't make you feel overwhelmed immediately because you're surrounded by experts. You know, it's not not starting with that advanced class and kind of easing yourself that there are spaces for people who are new or, you know, coming back from injuries or whatnot. I think that's
definitely,
I love that.
Like, for example, the class I just taught this morning, these are very, very young athletic people that teach skiing, and yet they're very, very tight, and they're embarrassed because they can't touch the ground, and so by designing classes that are accessible, that target the muscles and the joints that are particularly affected by teaching skiing, it breaks down the barrier of fear. I don't know why. I think part of the problem with yoga in the United States is it's become athleticized. where if you really look at its origins in Eastern India, it's so gentle and so adaptive and so about just breathing. Even if you just sit on your mat and you focus on your breathing, that's doing yoga. Even if you quiet your mind and just sit there for 5 minutes with your eyes closed, that's doing yoga. So trying to find places that are committed to that, and it should be written up in their philosophy. So if you only have a yoga studio in your neighborhood that does core or power yoga, no, that's not for you. And maybe start doing something at home. So, just finding one that has a philosophy that's aligned where you are at this point in time. You keep on mentioning, health and doctor's offices and all that kind of stuff. I've hesitated to speak to it because it's so tough. I mean, I'm sure a lot of the listeners are struggling with getting healthcare insurance for their families. I think choosing physicians, especially, dealing with the LGBTQ issues. Again, interview. Be your advocate. Make sure you sign on with a group that shares your philosophy, where you can come in and not be judged or barred by, the dynamics or the reality of your family. And I guess that's one thing that's occurring to me is like self-advocacy. Really knowing what you and your family needs and shopping for yoga, meditation, healthcare providers that are aligned with your value system.
Yeah, that actually was really exactly what I was thinking about next, of talking about those healthy practices and then how that ties with safety for families and then inclusivity. So I, for example, I run regularly, which I just never would have expected about myself like 5 years ago before I really started. I'm still shocked that I enjoy it as much as I do, but my safety as a woman running alone is just really always on my mind. Careful about the times of day that I run, where I run. If I'm going to a new town, I'll like research ahead of time to see if there's been assault on a particular running path that I want to use. Like I really tried to do some of that research, as you mentioned, the importance of some research. So that's, that is certainly always in my head for this one particular thing that I love so much to do. And LGBTQ parents and people in LGBTQ families also face issues of that sense of safety and feeling welcome at the gym or the doctor's office or a yoga studio. I'm interested if you've experienced this as an LGBTQ person or and then like, what have you done, or have you seen that in some of the classes that you've led of maybe people who are specifically concerned because of who they are, who's in their family, any of those sort of different makeups of what is so important for our LGBTQ community?
Yeah, I can't say that I've experienced that in the yoga or the meditation world. And I think that's because of the value system and philosophy of those particular practices, which are incredibly inclusive and incredibly adaptive. I can say that in the healthcare system, one always hesitates to fully reveal. Or I do until I can assess, the safety of the practitioner I'm with. Like my primary care physician, of course, we have a longstanding relationship. So it's more in those surgical settings or those emergency room settings where it's sad to always observe myself, but I always, take a pause and have that inner scan. It's like, is it safe to reveal? I would say as time goes on, I feel more and more comfortable, but I always do take that step. But I would think in yoga and meditation, if there's any, and that's just so against the value system of yoga that if a studio is like that, they shouldn't be in business, and you certainly should not be in their space.
Yeah, I completely agree. I know. So I have lesbian moms, and I know, I remember like us not always like exactly talking about it, even with like our pediatrician, you know, not necessarily fully telling them like who's in my family, or having to fill out doctor's forms where I have a donor and I just couldn't answer half of my medical questions, you know, that would be on these forms.
Yes.
And thankfully, you know, I might, we would get maybe a little bit of pushback, but it wouldn't be, you know, too much. And I get encouraged with some states. Yep. As they're putting, as we have more protections, and people can't be turned away from a physician, or we're trying, you know, at least, in, you know, for family quality council and many of our community, you know, and movement partners are really trying to push back with some of that against this license to discriminate legislation that we're seeing, because it's so important, you know, that are both parents able, or, you know, are parents able to just take their kids to the doctor's office? Like, are they considered a legal parent? You know, that was always an issue in my family. All of these different things that, you know, I think it is just for those who are able to, you know, to do that extra research. There are some sites that allow you to sort of check, you know, for LGBTQ friendly, you know, outwardly facing, like self-proclaimed LGBTQ affirming health spaces. But it's, you know, it's definitely a challenge that we know that a lot of our families are facing. And so one of the steps that Family Equality Council is doing is like, okay, how do we really, or we're working hard to stop those license to discriminate laws, because that is going through, that directly impacts the health and safety of a lot of our families. Well, we're coming up on, you know, the end of our time together. So I want to just ask you then that question. And so on your life, how do you care for yourself? What does we're starting 2018, it's a new year.
Yeah.
So for you, how do you define being healthy as an individual and as a family? And how do you care for yourself?
Yeah. Okay. So I definitely have some New Year's resolutions. Like I said, I have a fairly established yoga and meditation practice. However, life gets busy, right? And that's when I say my fallback is a self-described kind of laziness, saying, oh, I'll let it slide today. And what I have really come to realize as 2017 came to a close, and there's so much darkness in our world in terms of our leaders and that, this, that, and the other, I'm realizing that I don't really have a choice. If I want to stay healthy, that I really need to keep a disciplined practice. And the way I've decided to make that workable, and that's what I said during the podcast, it doesn't need to be an hour of yoga. It doesn't need to be 20 minutes of meditation every day. If I can do 20 minutes of yoga a day and 10 minutes of meditation a day, I'll take it. So again, realistically, carving out time for yourself. And the reason it's healthy for families, if my mind is calm and if my body is calm, I can be calm and non-reactive for my kids and my spouse. So I kind of had this realization that it's bigger than me. If I'm healthy, my family system is healthy, and then my contribution to the world is healthy. And so that's that piece. In terms of the nutrition piece, I just try and make really good choices and yet be very realistic. We do have our favorite vices. We will go to those. But again, just trying to keep more on the upside of balance of healthy than our vices. So again, I think it's key. Be good to yourself. Be kind to yourself. Try and integrate 80% healthy practices. And when you do your 20%, whether it's the coffee or the alcohol or the sugar, it's like, you know what? It's okay. So I guess in summary, try and commit to one or two things for yourself every day, and know that even if it's just half an hour a day, that's better than nothing.
That's so great. And I love that idea that it is bigger than just us as an individual, that we are, you know, able to then make more meaningful contributions in our personal lives and in the community at large. That's so true. By having, I know when I feel rested or like, you know, after I've been able to have that time to go on a run afterwards, I feel more present and I feel more, you know, in my own body and healthier, which I know it absolutely impacts how I interact with those who are closest to me. That's fantastic. Well, I think that's a really beautiful, so thank you. I think that's a beautiful note to end our conversation on. Thank you so much. It's a big thing.
You're so welcome. Happy New Year.
Yeah, what a great way to start our year. So that will do it for us for this month's episode of Outspoken Voices. Again, thank you, Jane, for joining us. And thank you for everyone.
Oh, my pleasure, Emily.
Thank you. So everyone who has been enjoying this conversation as we start off our second year of the Outspoken Voices podcast, please rate, review, subscribe to Outspoken Voices. I'd love to hear ideas for future episodes or just hear your thoughts. You can find Outspoken Voices on our website, SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, and just wherever you get your podcasts. You can also find Family Equality Council at www.familyequality.org. And we're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Family Equality. So until next month, remember that love, justice, family, and equality is what brings our families together.